Episode 28, Between Two Wheels podcast, cycling news and interviews, analysis from Northern California. This episode is brought to you by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people get special life insurance rates. Go to healthiq.com/BTW to support the show and learn more.
Hi, this is Nate Dunn from Data Driven Athlete with a quick coaching tip. So in a recent study, researchers set out to compare the bone mineral density of recreational and trained cyclists. So in this study, the recreational group rode about 6 hours a week, and the trained group rode about 11 hours a week. Now what they found was that about 63% of trained cyclists and 44% of recreational cyclists were identified as being osteopenic, which meant they had lower than normal bone mineral density. And perhaps most surprisingly, about 16% of the trained were found to be osteoporotic. So what this means in a practical sense is that if you're riding quite a bit, it would probably be in your best interest to add some sort of supplementary exercise to your cycling to help offset the non-weight-bearing nature of cycling, and to insert either some impact through some jogging or through some jumping type exercises, or maybe some strength training to help stress your bones in a different way. If you'd like to check out some more details on this study, you can head over to our website at datadrivenathlete.com and just type in bone density in the search box. Thanks.
Welcome to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is Tyler Yonke with Kurt Mills and Chris Flower. How are you guys doing today?
Real good, Tyler. Thanks.
Good.
Doing well. Thank
good,
you.
Good. And we have a special guest with us today, Matt Chatleong. Is that, did I pronounce that right?
About as, no.
Okay, we'll just go with Matt Chat and we'll move on from here.
That's fair.
So I'm gonna, my intro for you here, and please correct me, this is just me doing my own little stalking online.
Oh, sure, sure.
And the fact that I know you a little bit. Began bike racing in 2010 as a Cat 5, as most people do. Moved up to a 4 starting the next year, all the way up through a 2 for 2011. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
And then now you're world tour and everything. Did I go too far? Yeah. That's pretty impressive, though. Pretty quick upgrade. Now, and then you're Cat 1. You raced with Folsom, VW, Rayleighs, and then Mark Prostrava, and who morphed into H24 the last few years. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so that's a really quick succession of bike racing going from nothing. And look, in our vast amount of cycling that we have here and experience compared to yours, and you've surpassed us quite nicely. How'd you do that?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I've surpassed anybody. I mean, I don't know. But I don't know. It's been a really fun journey. It's been an interesting development for me jumping into a sport like cycling. I came from a football background, so no real endurance sports background, but a lot of explosive strength and a lot of power on the bike with a good sprint. So I think that kind of played into my favor in terms of upgrading quickly. Going through the lower categories, I did well in criteriums. I don't think I did a road race until I was a Cat 3. So that was actually a really interesting thing to jump into one of those after racing, you know, maybe 20 or 30, I don't know, however many crits, and thinking that was all that bike racing was. So yeah, I mean, really just being able to utilize my sprint to my strength. Training with Data Driven Athlete was a big part of that as well.
You got involved with Nate early on, is that correct?
Yeah, as a Cat 4. The year that I went from a 4 to a 2, I think. Yeah, so 2011. So my second year, started working with Nate like maybe in January. And things just kind of went from there. Spent a lot of time developing other areas of cycling aside from my sprint ability. And I think that's what played a big role in me being able to move through the categories pretty quick.
Now, I think you just kind of mentioned it, but so being a crit sprinter, probably a big advantage for going through the categories as quick as you did compared to someone, let's say they do hill climbs.
Yeah.
And their ability to do so, they've got to pick those short little, you know, different races, and you've got them every week and ability to
every office park.
Huge fields, so there's always points.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your first road race? Did you pick something really hilly just to kind of
see
what it was about?
Oh, no, no. I did, what was it? Yeah, Snelling Road Race as a Cat 3, and I thought it was so hilly. I'm like, we climbed like 1,500 feet. That was so hard. Those roller through the feed zone. Oh, man, it was getting me every time. And I thought the finish was like a big uphill, you know?
It's right.
Like a roller. Yeah. That was a tough.
It's still
one.
A big hill for some people.
It was a big hill for me. I was a big boy.
So how did you do? How did you do? You said you did it as a three.
Yeah.
So you waited a whole year to do a, because you went so quick. But so how was that when you? Because that those fields are pretty big usually at Snelling.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. I really didn't know what I was doing. I was just kind of like sitting in the group thinking like, this is a really slow crit, but also like this is a really long crit. And when is the sprint? Like, this is just a really boring crit. So my goal was to sit in.
Did you take any preems?
Yeah, no, I didn't take any preems. Yeah. But I did all right. I came out of the final turn a little far back, maybe like 12th or something. And then like maybe a little farther than that. But a bunch of people crashed. Dude, there was like juniors crashing into each other and people were falling
on
down.
On the last corner or on that on final the up, sprint?
In, like sprinting side by side, like hook and bars falling down everywhere.
Oh,
yeah, I think I ended up like 9th or 10th maybe. So I was like excited, you know, top 10, first road race.
We have, do you know Patrick? What's his last name?
Sorry. Apparently you don't know Patrick.
He hasn't ridden for a while, but we came around that corner and he was in front of me. And the next thing I know, he's header into the fence on the left side through the ditch. So yeah, he
was on the first lap though.
Well, I think it was.
That was for a preem though, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was my lead out,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's impressive. did Nate help you at all back then as far as like preparing for a road race compared to a crit, or was he just all about, here's how you mash the pedals?
Oh man. Honestly, I don't remember anything like that in particular. Typically he was trying to teach me how to mash the pedals and how to just be a smaller human being.
Smaller. We'll get into that part in a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not ego wise, you're talking like physically.
Yeah, some people strive to be a bigger person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nate just beats you down.
Yeah. He's like, dude, you just got to shrink that head, you know?
Yeah. And the diet.
Yeah.
That's all good. So when did you get into cycling? Was it that first year or had you been riding before that at all?
I had been riding before that. Not a lot. I thought it was a lot. I really didn't, like I said, I didn't have any concept of endurance sports. So coming from football, like, you know, a 10-mile bike ride seemed just insane. So I would ride, you know, maybe 10 miles twice, maybe three times a week, sort of as hard as I could in just like a really big gear, because I thought that's how you went fast.
Of course.
Right? So that was cycling for me for about a year before I got hooked up with Rio Strada Racing, actually, starting out. So I went to Casa Robel High School, where I met Rob Lever, who was a woodshop teacher, and he heard I rode bikes, and I TA'd for his class. So I just
now, did he have 10 fingers? Just because most shop teachers don't.
He did. I think I remember something funky. There's a finger thing. I'm not sure what, some debilitative like finger thing.
Yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, it's usually typical.
Yeah, there's something.
Have you seen my? Oh, it is.
Yeah, anyway, so he rode for Rio Strada. I heard I rode bikes. He's like, hey, man, you should try this out. You know, you're a junior, so you have plenty of time, and you could race juniors and, you know, kind of see what it's all about. So I tried it, you know, contacted Ron Rouse, the president, and told him, hey, man, like, I really want to do this. And he's, oh, I'm really not sure about you, you know, I don't know. but I'm really glad that he decided to kind of have faith in me and let me join the team and not be a disaster.
You said you were
a good turnout.
Yeah, it turned out okay. Here we are. Right?
Yeah, and here we are. Now, you said you came from football. I mean, did you were you playing in high school? Were you or just peewee? Or how much football were you actually doing?
So yeah, up until high school, never played any football. But I always kind of wanted to. But you know, it's a dangerous sport. So mom wasn't stoked on that. But started freshman year, I was just like, you know what, I'm doing this. And then sure enough, I got hurt. So sophomore year, I had a pretty catastrophic knee injury, maybe like with two games to go in the season. So that kind of stopped football for me because I didn't want to have surgery to repair it and this and that. So yeah, okay, no more contact sports, probably a good idea. So yeah, I ended up getting into cycling.
Seems like a completely smooth transition, right?
You're right, yeah.
Shaving the legs and all that stuff. So.
No. I started by jumping on like a BMX bike over the summer between my sophomore and junior year. And I would just go ride up through like the Lincoln Hills and stuff, and I thought it was just so awesome when I would crush these climbs on a BMX bike, but they're what I would consider like rollers now, and they were really big hills to me back then. But you know, it's cool.
So what about your progression through cycling, and you've gotten into coaching now too. Was that just your whole involvement of hey, I'm into bike racing and I want to see what makes me better, or Nate's involvement, kind of why did you get into coaching?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So obviously I hit cycling at an age where, you know, I was finishing up high school. You know, I started racing senior year, kind of became a big thing for me. Really didn't know what I wanted to do in terms of getting an education beyond high school. You know, I thought maybe I wanted to go into physical therapy, wasn't really sure. So ultimately, all that kind of falls under the umbrella of a kinesiology degree. Yeah. And so I was having a really great experience working with Nate, you know, through basically what was my first year of college at this point. I decided to just go to junior college at Sierra and knock out my general ed before I really decided what I wanted to do. And, you know, and he's like, you know, well, you could study exercise science under kinesiology. It's kind of the same thing. And, you know, if you find it interesting, whatever, he kind of talked to me about it. And I remember thinking like, hey, that's really cool. One thing kind of led to another. Eventually, I transferred to Sac State and studied kinesiology and studied exercise science. Really, really liked it. And, you know, meantime was kind of working at the bike shop. You know, that was really great. Also, you know, you get tired of working in retail at some point, yeah, right? It's difficult. So at that point, I kind of decided to go into coaching and talk to Nate and
You're quite the accomplished mechanic, right? I mean,
I don't know about that. No, people don't trust me to touch their bikes, man.
Well, I remember distinctly you grabbing my bike before a few races and doing some things. Should I not have trusted you?
I don't know, man. Did it work?
I think that's when I got in a break with you. I don't know, so it could have.
Okay. It was just lucky.
Or maybe it didn't.
Yeah.
Did he work on your rear derailleur?
Yeah.
Is that the issue?
No, it was okay. The brakes.
I made him stop rubbing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That could have been.
So I was working in sales and as a mechanic, and I really always wanted to be a mechanic. I didn't really want to be doing sales stuff. And, you know, I got to dabble in a little bit of both, so it was fun.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
But it's tough as a cyclist when you're trying to you know, compete, and then you're on your feet all day as a mechanic.
Yeah.
But yet you want to be kind of near that whole industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do what you can, I guess, at that point.
For sure. And I think that's kind of the point where I started traveling more, and, you know, scheduling and stuff at work started getting more difficult. And I had school, you know, my schedule started getting a little crazy. And so that's about when I decided to, you know, start the coaching situation. And
when did you graduate? What year?
I finished up my bachelor's in 2016, I believe. Yeah, 2016. Yeah,
memorable time, it sounds like.
Yeah,
it's,
you
all
know,
last year.
Yeah, I think it was last year. Yeah, and so now I'm back at Sac State in the graduate program for exercise science, and really loving that.
Oh, good.
Fun.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. So you were down in Southern California last year?
So I finished up my bachelor's, and then my girlfriend, Shannon, was down, who's also been with me, super supportive this entire time, I should mention. She and I got together right about the time I started riding bikes. And so that's insane that she stuck with me through all of this just silly stuff. But anyway, yes, yeah, so she's down there for occupational therapy school. And since I had time, obviously, before I went back to the graduate program, where I wasn't necessarily being held in Sacramento by a job or anything like that, you know, obviously the coaching can be done pretty remotely. I decided to go down there and have some fun, hang out with her. It was really cool.
Now, I happened to see online that you were coaching UCLA cycling team. Is that correct?
Or yeah.
Is that someone else with the same name?
Yeah. No, it's the UCLA cycling team. That was actually a really cool thing for me. I didn't get the opportunity to race collegiate at all, you know, going to a junior college for most of, you know, my college credits and that kind of thing. So no collegiate cycling for me. And UCLA has a really well-established program. They've been around for, gosh, I don't know how long that team's been around, a long time. So the team is well-organized. They have a lot of sponsors. There's a lot of new recruits every year who come out and try racing and get involved and love it. So it was a fun experience for me to not only learn about collegiate cycling and see some of what that sport can be like, you know, when you're racing with all of your peers and traveling and seeing the same group of, you know, other collegiate athletes every weekend. It's a cool thing. So I got to get into that and hang out with the team and help them.
Were you more endurance coaching or strategy coaching or kind of both. What was your role?
Okay. Yeah, a little bit of both. So I would go to some races. We would definitely put up, you know, courses and things like that, you know, at a team meeting a few days before each race, talk about different tactics, how people should play different roles in terms of, you know, like team tactics and, you know, just stuff like that. So, and we also had like a monthly training plan that everybody was kind of on the same plan. So it wasn't like the same individual coaching that I do, you know, with all of my athletes now, but, you know, we had everybody on like a monthly plan that, you know, it was either for a really experienced athlete, they could follow one plan, or like a novice athlete could follow a less structured plan. You know, one was made for a power meter. One was made for just like either heart rate or just feel, basically. So
yeah. Did you go with the team out to Nationals and Grand Junction?
I didn't. I wanted to, but with scheduling, something happened, some conflict, and I couldn't go. But yeah, the team did go, and they had a blast. It was fun. I watched all the live stream.
Oh, well, nice.
yelled at the computer.
Yeah, that's awesome. So on your coaching side here, you just mentioned you kind of giving instead of an individual plan. What do you mostly work with as far as coaching? Are you really in depth in doing, you know, I don't know, coaching with, you know, daily activity, or do you give out like plans that are like scheduled out, kind of like what you're doing with the whole team there on your level?
Yeah. So for me, like currently with Data Driven Athlete, is that sort of what you're asking? Yeah. So,
or do you highlight elsewhere? I don't know.
Well, no, I just meant like, I didn't know if you meant like, what am I doing now? Yeah. Versus if you were asking about something else that I was doing with UCLA,
but, gotcha.
Yeah, so what I do now is really more of on a daily level, so to speak. So I don't have any athletes that are like on the same training plan or anything like that. So everybody, you know, we start by setting goals, figuring out what people want to do with their year, right? Because that's, you know, do I want to upgrade to a Cat 2? Do I want to, you know, win this race? Do I want to get on the podium at this race? How many top 10s, you know, at X amount of road races? Whatever it might be that a person wants to do, or, you know, even I want to finish a death ride. You know, like that's some of the most fun to me, is getting people to like finish something that they never thought they could do. It's different. It's a different kind of, challenge, but yeah, so we start with stuff like that. You know, kind of look at what amount of time they have to train, figure out what works best with their scheduling, periodize their training, and, you know, everybody, I think I talk to almost every day through Training Peaks. So if people do a ride, a workout, upload it, I'll take a look at it, give them a yay or nay. Usually yays.
Pass or fail.
Yeah, no. You know, ask them how it went, whatever, that kind of thing. And just like keep touch with everybody. You know, we chat on the phone every week, you know, that kind of thing. And scheduling isn't like a big bulk, you know, like month by month plan. It's like a week by week thing, just with, you know, as things come up, or you know, we transition through different phases, and you know, people get sick, or you never know.
What do you think, what have you come upon as to the most difficult, like the biggest hurdle for a lot of these clients? You know, the death ride one, let's go there, for example.
Sure,
I'm imagining that person is a little bit more of a novice to some extent.
Sure.
Or,
yeah,
as far as racing goes, but that's not necessarily a race, so you're just trying. What's an obstacle you're looking for that kind of person?
So how do you get around like a time crunch per se? Like, you know, if that person wants to do a death ride and they've got like 8 hours a week to ride or 6 hours a week to ride, you know, how do you maximize what they're doing to make it, to, you know, make them capable of handling 130 miles with a ton of climbing? You know, it's a lot of riding. So that's a big hurdle. I think, I don't know.
Let's go there. What do you do for some, I mean, that's been my obstacle for my last part of my career here.
Yeah.
Is how do you, maximize your ability to, to do a longer race when you don't have the time to put in for training. So
yeah.
Say you're a master's athlete, just under 39, with a little bit of a weight problem. What would you do exactly?
Roughly, and you go by Kurt.
Yeah, yeah.
Alias.
If you go by Kurt, I mean, it's going to be a different story altogether. But yeah, so it's tough, you know, if you can't manipulate, you know, your overall, ultimately you have to continue progressing how much stress you're applying to your body in some way. And if you can't do that from a duration standpoint, you've kind of maxed that out, then I think it makes sense to look at intensity, right? So it's a matter of continuing to apply some kind of overload with intensity to force adaptation. And so I think it typically makes sense to focus on, you know, increasing your FTP or your lactate threshold, you know, basically your ability to produce steady power for long periods of time. And so when you break that down, there's lots of different ways that you can go about that, you know, in an 8-hour week, whether that's to, you know, try and increase the amount of total time that you spend in zone, to try and slowly bring up the wattage at the same amount of time in zone, you know, breaking it apart into smaller chunks and, you know, aiming for higher wattages, you know, that kind of thing. So anything you can do to continue to drive that number up, is going to make riding below that wattage, you know, less taxing, if that makes sense, for any period of time.
Just for the maybe someone's just joining in, and we've described it before, but not to the extent you probably could. What is FTP?
Well,
we can edit in. I'm sure you know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So FTP is sort of like a concept that describes a power number that you could hold for a given period of time, based on a power number that you've held for a given period of time. So it's kind of a Training Peaks thing. I believe it was first introduced by Andrew Coggin, or Dr. Andrew Coggin, I believe. And so the idea is that you're trying to figure out some way to estimate the amount of power that you could hold for an hour, which I think is, you know, a really good indicator of endurance performance. So typically, like looking at like an hour time trial in a lab, you would be able to tell a lot about how a person could perform under a lot of different scenarios. So not everybody has the ability to go out and nail an hour effort. So the FTP concept is basically trying to estimate an hour power off of a 20-minute effort. And so, you know, taking about 5% off of a 20-minute effort is supposedly what you should be able to hold for about an hour. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It really depends on the athlete. I would say for most people, it's probably like 30 to 40 minutes, realistically. But in any case, you know, that number could, you know, as a result, describe a bit about your endurance performance, wattage-wise. So if you can continue to bring that number up, then, you know, your endurance performance will be increasing, you know, across all kinds of different durations.
So the time crunched athlete, how do they then increase their FTP? What would be your suggestions out there for someone, you know, that's trying to increase their FTP without giving away all your trade secrets, of course?
I don't have any secrets.
On the time crunched, because look, I don't have time to even do the 20 minute test, right?
Yeah. Go so hard.
Just continue. So let me back up here and ask you a different question. Time crunch person out there, myself included. I mean, sure. We're all over the map here. But that person may not have a lot of time to be put in a lot of base during the winter. Mm-hmm. Do you have any, what do you think about just keeping the engine revved up all winter long with short duration stuff? Or do you think that base is really necessary for a good season?
Well, I think it depends on your goals. Do you want to be a crit racer? Do you want to be a stage racer? Do you want to be a time trialist? What do you want to do? Do you want to win 5-hour road races? Because I think if you do, then the longer the event that, you know, the larger energy expenditure that your event requires, probably the more important base is. You know, especially if you're talking multi-day and that kind of thing. But if you're wanting to be a good crit racer, then no. Like, if you want to be competitive in a 60-minute race, I don't think that it really makes sense for you to focus on putting in tons and tons and tons of base. You can totally do, like you said, and keep that engine revved all winter long. You know, continue to manipulate your training stress through intensity. You know, the matter where it gets tough is if you've got sort of the mental fortitude to continue doing that, right? Because not every athlete has the motivation to go out and go hard all winter long. But if you are a time crunched athlete and you're really not sure how you want to improve your FTP, or how you can improve your FTP, but you want to, I think the bottom line is that you have to go hard. You have to challenge your metabolism in some way. And, you know, ultimately, as long as you are spending periods of time where your legs are on fire, you're probably going to be making some improvement to that number, if that makes sense. So whether it's like, you know, high intensity intermittent interval training kind of stuff, you know, where you're doing, you know, really hard on and off type efforts, or if you're going out and trying to lay out like steady, hard, you know, 8, 10, 12 minute efforts, anything that's around, you know, longest stretch of road you have near your neighborhood where you can go out and hammer, repetitively, that's fine. You just have to keep increasing the stress in some way to keep that number coming up, whether it be through pushing harder and doing more wattage for that amount of time or increasing the amount of time you're doing it. You know, anything like that. So it's just about progression.
So I guess that really goes back to your first assessment of the person is, what's your goal?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you're right. If you want to do, okay, I want to win stage races. Okay, how much time do you have to practice or, you know, train during the week? Well, I've got 5 hours. Well, maybe not.
We revisit that goal. Yeah. maybe we want to do really well on a stage. Have a stage day one.
Yeah.
No, but that's not to say it's not doable. Because then you get into, you know, well, what, how did that person pick mom and dad, right?
Yeah.
Because ultimately, like, you have those people out there who train 5 hours a week and they can crush a stage race.
Yeah.
So it still happens, but, you know, it's not always black and white.
You could probably just drink beet juice or something. Like, there's some way to compensate for the hard work.
Right.
You just have to figure out what that is this year. A couple years ago, it was beet juice.
It doesn't work.
I think we've just determined, Chris and I talked about it yesterday, it's have an asthma issue, right? Performance enhancing.
I take my inhaler until I'm twice the threshold too. That's the thing.
Do you have asthma?
I do. Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Awful.
No. What's your take on the Froom thing? Just by simply the fact that you have an asthma issue and you use an inhaler.
I do. Yeah. Yeah. So my inhaler is cleared to like a threshold limit through you know, WADA code or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly familiar with the proper terminology, but yeah, I think a lot of athletes do have exercise-induced asthma. I don't think it's a fake thing. Certainly a real thing, and you know, you hear about it a lot. You hear about, at the same time, asthma medications being abused. I'm not even really sure how that works.
Well, that's what I was going to wonder. So we had mentioned yesterday, I mean, can you take it to an extent where, hey, it helps me breathe, you know, this percent, and then the more I take, it's going to be that. And at what point, you're just a balloon? I don't know.
Yeah.
Your lungs are ridiculous?
I don't know the real mechanism of action on a lot of those drugs, so I'm not sure that there's like some saturation point where ultimately the more you take, you don't get any more effect at that point. But I know that, you know, most of them are a stimulant of some kind, right? So I don't know if it's like an effect that you're getting, you know, through like more of that stimulant action versus being able to like actually breathe more, like you're in some way like increasing your cardiac output through some sort of stimulant. I don't know. I'm just making guesses. I have no idea how it works.
I just thought it was interesting since you you're asthmatic.
Yeah, I take my prescribed dose and it works and that's it, right?
That's how it should be, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not even really sure.
Have you had more trouble? When I was younger and I did racing like in Southern California with the bad smog.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, it felt like athletic-induced asthma, but it might have just been smog-induced. I mean, did you have trouble when you were down there
totally.
The last few years racing?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you pretty much are, if you miss your inhaler, like you're having a great day. You're not breathing well. It's not fun. So I didn't race a ton in Southern California while I was down there. I think I only did one race and, you know, like locally or whatever. But lots of hard training rides, lots of group rides, that kind of thing. And yeah, you definitely need it. You know, up here, especially during the winter when we get a lot of rains and things like that, I can not take it and I'm okay. You know, every year that we do the Redlands Classic, like that Eastern, I don't know what technically you'd call the area, like just east of LA, like in the San Bernardino Mountains, that kind of thing.
The Empire.
Inland Empire.
Inland Empire.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. That air like just gets gnarly. I think a lot of that pollution from LA kind of blows east with the coastal
Santa Ana winds.
Santa Ana winds. Thank you. Oh man. Chief meteorologist Tyler.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that air gets all blocked up there, and like that's a big issue for a lot of guys every year at that race. And it was always one for me. I remember having a pretty distinct discussion with a former teammate, Chris Harlan Dunaway, and he says, you know, I said, you know, that's such a good race for you, like talking about Sunset Loop and this and that. It suited him well. He's like, yeah, I really like it, but I don't count on it. Like, I just, it's not even fair. Like, I can't breathe. I have an allergy to whatever's in the air there that other people don't, and I can't do it. So, yeah, it can be a challenge.
Yeah. It's a bummer. All right, cycling fans. We of the Between Two Wheels podcast are proud to have Health IQ as a sponsor of the show, and we encourage everyone to take a look at what they offer, not just because they are a sponsor, but because everyone should be thinking and preparing for their future. In cycling, we are always training and preparing for our next race. This could include diet, intervals, making sure the bike is ready, and even studying the course profile and route. If you take that much effort in preparing for a local bike race, are you doing the same homework and preparation and researching life insurance rates? Well, enter Health IQ. Health IQ is a life insurance agency and your best portal for saving money on life insurance. As a cyclist or active person, you can benefit from your lifestyle with savings and lower rates on life insurance. Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for people just like you, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. Think about it. You're healthy, and your active lifestyle is a result of your health. But they work together, and healthy people deserve special rates. It's like saving money by being a good driver. Health IQ gets you lower rates on life insurance with your health-conscious lifestyle. How do they know you're a cyclist or a runner or vegan or a healthy person? Well, the first two can be accomplished by submitting race results, Strava data, or the like. The vegan one, that may require a little more in-depth conversation with a specialist. Between Two Wheels is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people get special life insurance rates. So go to healthiq.com/BTW, healthiq.com/BTW. The BTW is for Between Two Wheels. Go there to support the show and learn more.
So you spent time doing a lot of group rides up here, and now you've done some group rides down there. Just from a ride perspective, do you find there's differences culturally within the cycling scenes between Northern California and Southern California?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Southern California, everybody looks like a pro.
I think we do the same up here, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, but I think people are faster up here.
Okay, good.
So when you say look like a pro, it's just their kit or their bike or something like that?
Everything, man. They're just like, everybody's super pro. You know, it's like LA lifestyle, right? I mean, I was living in Hollywood, so maybe that had something to do with it. Yeah. But yeah, I did this one ride called Nichols Ride because it started like not far from where I was living in East Hollywood. And so it basically can be a big group, but it's a really easy rollout through like Santa Monica. And then they smash up this Hollywood Hills Canyon called Nichols Canyon. It's like maybe a 10-minute climb, really, really hard, and then it goes along Mulholland Highway, kind of out towards the 405 and then down. But ultimately, I remember the second time I did it, 200 maybe people, really big. Wow. Like, take the biggest NorCal group ride you've seen and triple it. Like, huge turnout.
Thanksgiving Day ride.
So okay, it's about the Thanksgiving Day ride size, yeah.
So where would you rather do a group ride, in Sacramento or Southern California?
Well, that's tough because...
Going back to Southern California? Or well, do you have clients down there? What's your politically correct answer? No, just kidding.
Sorry. I don't know. I think I'd rather do one in NorCal, but this ride was fun in particular because I got there and everybody just looked so pro. Dude, I'm looking around like, oh my God, this is going to be really fast. Like, all these guys look really fast. I don't know anybody here. I'm really intimidated. These guys all look really good. And... dude, we hit the climb, and like within a minute, it was down to like four people. What's going on? What is happening? We were from like 200 to 4. I don't know if anybody just like people just didn't want to go that hard. I don't really know, but I mean, it was like pretty hilarious. So, I mean, there's fun things that happen like that down there because like the ride was still hard, you know. Like super pro Phil Guymon guy was out there, and you know, like he was pushing it hard on the climb, and that was pretty fun. So, you know, you get things like that, right? But, you know, in NorCal, I think the group is more tight-knit. Everybody kind of knows everybody. It's a fun place to go out and test yourself regularly because you're putting yourself up against the same people, you know, like over and over again. And I think we generally have less interrupted riding for sure. That makes it pretty fun. But the dynamic here is just different. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know if it's personally because I know people because I've been here. But I feel like everybody kind of knows everybody. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, you know, our community is not huge, so you see them all the time.
I was asking because in February of 2011, you said...
Oh, boy.
Ha, ha, ha. Just heard Sacramento made the top five most miserable cities in the U.S.
Yeah.
Do you still think that's funny?
Yeah, actually, yeah. That's pretty funny.
Was that wasn't cycling related, was it? It was just miserable cities?
Yeah, it was just...
Well, I mean, but what's one, two, and three? It's like Fresno, Bakersfield. And...
I'm not holding it against him. Oh, okay. This is something he said. I wanted to see if he stood by it.
You know, I think, I don't know, I think you change a lot from the time that you're, you know, 18 to 25, right? But,
did he say that when he was 18?
Can you check those facts?
Well, can we get a fact checker?
That'll be Zimney on our...
December 25th of 2013, we're coming up on December 25th right now, you said, Merry Christmas, everyone. Keep safe and have fun. And... You said this in the middle of the war on Christmas. How did you conjure up that bravery to come out and say Merry Christmas?
What is the war on Christmas?
The war on Christmas?
Can you describe that?
That's when everybody had to say Happy Holidays because Christmas wasn't allowed.
Oh. It was offensive, I believe.
Yeah, was that a Starbucks thing?
Maybe his ignorance is actually what gave him that bravery.
Maybe.
And I'm just misplacing it all.
Could be.
Do we need to separate you two? This is going to get hostile. Wait.
No, I don't have another one. Unless you want to tell us what happened to those kittens you found in 2015 on White Rock Road.
Oh, you can ask Adam Switters.
Are they still alive?
I don't know.
Oh, they're Adam Switters.
They got passed off to him. Dude, he took all of it. He said, "Give me these cats." Wow. I said, "All right, man."
So what was the deal? I'm not up on that one. What happened? And well, by the way, those are really nice looking cat slippers you have.
Yeah. So we were living in Rancho Cordova, not far from here, and I think my roommate was out for a jog, something like that. Found a box of kittens. Oh man, here we go. What do we do? So we get this box of kittens, make a post on Facebook, you know, for Kurt Mills to reference you know, years later. And ultimately, we end up not being able to find anybody to take these cats. We don't know what to do with them. Like, I'm not keeping a box of kittens. I have an apartment. It's just not going to happen. So finally, Adam Switters is nice enough to say, hey, like, I think I can find a shelter, bring them over to my place. And we'll take care of him. Dude, he stayed up for like 72 hours straight bottle feeding these kittens because he couldn't find somewhere to take them.
How many kittens?
I don't remember. Maybe four? How many were in the picture,
Kurt? I don't know what fits in a box, and I didn't actually see a picture.
There was a picture on the,
I didn't see one.
Wow.
So that was very nice of Adam. You think Chuck Hutchison would have done the same?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I think everybody except he's a lover. Kurt would have done this.
Yeah, I was
just curious.
Yeah.
Because Chuck was your teammate, right?
Yeah. What do you think about Chuck?
I like Chuck. Why?
Oh, I don't know.
If you had
you to seemed pick... to doubt that he would have taken these kittens.
No, I didn't. That was just a question.
I
wasn't imposing anything. I'm a journalist.
I'm going to title this one, Chuck Hates Kittens.
Yeah. You should. Yeah. Wow, we should get him in here.
Yeah,
you can ask
we need
him.
To talk to... We saw him on a ride on a copy... No, it was a Wednesday ride this year. And someone missed... You mistook him for someone else? I don't know. He was...
Oh, for Jared Kessler.
There you go.
Yeah. We were going to talk about weight training, weren't we? Whether
maybe.
It makes you stronger on the bike.
Oh, yeah. You've been doing weight training, right?
I've been loving it.
Okay, well, why don't we get into that?
Sure.
We'll move away from cats and Chuck, and we should talk to Chuck at some point, but yeah.
Yeah.
What about Willie? Let's go back to Willie.
Wait, you said strength training. You're throwing me for so many loops here.
I talked to Willie earlier.
He's a pretty strong guy, right?
I think he was talking about some... Crit. I want to say Vancouver. Yes, where you guys kind of got into it. Do you remember that story?
Maybe. Was it this year? Last year?
You know, I need to listen to the podcast again. I don't remember what he said. He wasn't bad mouthing anybody. I just thought maybe we'd have a discussion.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember which one in particular. I think there was, if it was last year, I think I remember once where like. Yeah, I do, actually. Yeah, that was a year ago, yeah.
let me ask you this. So you, until you went into age 24, you were pretty much, you know, comes down to you. You're the sprinter on the team. Well, I mean, who were you with before that? I guess Folsom, Kessler. I don't know if you guys had to battle it out for who was the man there. But so how does that, when you go to a team then, they have Willie, there's probably some other guys, and you're not necessarily the point man for the sprint. How did that work for you, or were you fine with that? Or
Well, I think that sort of happened over time. And it's certainly a battle for sure. It's a tough thing to deal with. You know, you like winning, right?
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And you feel confident, you know, you have the ability to do it in a lot of scenarios. And so it is a tough thing, but it is also in a lot of cases just as rewarding to get a team win, right? So that is a tough thing. So yeah, sort of over time it happened, because when I first joined Mark Pro, I think Willie was hurt for like a year. Something was going on. He had a knee thing or something. And so there really wasn't that, like, ever, you know, like a, I don't know, how would you say it? Like
a hierarchy.
Any question. Yeah. Or of hierarchy, of anything like that. Right. Like I was the only sprinter there at a lot of the races. So it never really was a question of like, oh, is it matter Willie today or who?
Well, then there was
who,
Josh too, right?
Josh came later. Oh, did he?
Josh Carling?
Yeah, he came later.
He did.
He was, I think he was battling you guys for the first year. And then didn't he come over from Bikes Plus?
Yeah, I thought so. Maybe we got on the same time. I don't remember. No, he was a year later. He was the... Actually, I can't remember. I don't know. But Josh was always really just like, hey, I'm going to lead you out. Like, I don't expect anything. No, Josh came on the same year I came on. And he was like very adamant about like, hey, I'm going to be your guy. Like, I'll lead you out. And I don't expect anybody to lead me out. I'm here because I want to be a part of this team. And, you know, you're trying to do something in cycling. I'm just having fun. Like, this is my thing. So this is how it goes. I was like, okay. He's like, I know you'll get the job done. You won't let me down. Okay, cool.
That's actually really positive pressure in a sense, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm all in for you. Now, what are you going to do?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it worked well. Like, you know, we definitely had a lot of successes. It was really fun. Yeah.
So, okay. So we could deviate off of that and go to the weight training. So you've been doing that more this year, I understand. Kind of give us a rundown. First of all, how you even got into that.
Sure.
Because I've been told before, well, we'll just start there. How you even
got
into
it? Have you
it?
Been told?
Well, so this doesn't really, it's kind of related. It's weight training, but do everything specific to like how you would be on a bike, right? Or only weight training that's going to be kind of translating over to there. And I don't know that that's necessarily was the best advice. I mean, I didn't do core at the time.
Yeah.
Back when, you know, everything's like, I don't know. Tell me about if my thoughts, if it's incorrect or correct or what.
Well, I think specificity is probably an important thing. If you're going to spend time strength training, I mean, you want to strength train the proper muscles and probably do it, you know, at a velocity that makes sense for your sport. So, you know, like for instance, you probably don't want to be doing like a bunch of shoulder work if you're planning to improve your sprint power. Like, I mean, ultimately it might play a role, but you know, there's some amount of specificity, right? But I think in general, when you're talking about just strength or like the ability to, you know, make force with your muscles, it actually doesn't need to be really that specific. I think if you're doing leg exercises like a squat, you know, especially if you're using like free weights and things like that, you're doing squats, you're doing you know, maybe some explosive plyometric type strength training, you know, anything like that, you're probably going to see some amount of that cross over to pedaling a bicycle. You're activating the, you know, the same muscles, right? So yeah, I don't think you got bad advice if that's what you're asking. But
no, I know, but I mean, you know, ideas change over the years.
Sure.
And you know, this is possibly one of them. So yeah, give us some specifics of what you're doing and kind of maybe some advice for those out there that are looking for doing weight training.
Sure.
First of all, I think, does this help with bone density?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty,
so
it's been shown.
For masters sure. Should really be doing this.
I think masters should be doing all kinds of different weight bearing things, man. Like, go out, like, hike, do anything you can, walk, just like, don't sit on a bike and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty crazy when you consider the fact that you could be 40 and have like the lumbar vertebrae of a 75-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a good thing. you know, what happens when you get in a car accident? What happens when you fall down? What, you know, what do you do? So
yeah, and we're, every race we're on the verge of that, right? Falling down.
Yeah. Yeah, I've spent my fair share of time on the ground.
Yeah, so that's,
yeah. I think it certainly is something that masters racers might consider, you know, doing any kind of weight bearing exercise regularly, especially, you know, if you have time over the off season, throw it in. As far as weight training goes, you mentioned like what kind of advice would I give to a person who was like maybe wanting to work it into their schedule? Is that,
yeah.
Okay. You know, I think it's tough. It goes back to that whole goals thing and like, what do you want to do? And, you know, how much time do you have and this and that. For me, it was really convenient because I have, you know, a gym facility at Sac State, where I had, you know, one of the strength and conditioning students in the master's program help me properly lift and use good technique and things of that nature. So those are things that a lot of people don't have, right? That didn't cost me anything. So that's a factor to consider for sure. But like, does lifting weights make you faster on the bike? There's tons of evidence to show that, yeah, it can help. Like it's not going to hurt your cycling performance. You know, if you're doing it properly and, you know, you're layering it in with endurance training properly, you're not, you know, overloading yourself in the wrong ways. You're having ample recovery time, things like that. If you have really, really, really limited training time, and your goals are pretty specific for, you know, like a type of event that doesn't require, you know, a ton of strength, I don't know that it makes sense for you, but, you know, it really kind of goes back to that. Pick your goals and work backwards.
Do you think it should be something that's all season or primarily in the winter when you're kind of limited on your outside?
I think it's nice in the winter.
Changing things up.
Yeah, you're changing things up. You know, I think that if you're going to do it, the winter time is a great time to at least start, because you're going to have to reduce the amount of endurance training you're doing to some extent in order to recover, and you're going to be really sore, and there's just a lot of things that go into that. So, you know, doing it at a time where you're not requiring big efforts on the bike, a lot of intensity, that kind of thing, is a good time to at least get going on it. I mean, a lot of the research shows that you get a lot of benefits in about 8 weeks. You know, more than that, you can continue to have some benefits too, but ultimately there comes a point where, and I think this is kind of debated, how much do you have to do to hang on to that? Right. And, I think that it makes sense for people to continue some sort of maintenance with it at least, you know, beyond like 12 to maybe 16 weeks, something like that. And as you get closer to the point in your season where you want to start throwing in a lot of higher intensity efforts and you're kind of asking yourself for more on the bike, you can pull it out at that point. And as you're hitting a lot of high intensity, like really hard efforts on the bike, you're probably, you know, you're probably creating a situation where, you know, you're getting enough muscle fatigue to kind of hang on to some of that stuff. You know, so it is a pretty debated thing. It's hard to say.
So you're spending quite a bit of time in the weight room. You're in grad school. You're coaching. You're trying to maintain endurance on the bike. How much time do you find that you're actually in the gym? A couple times a week? A few times
a
week?
Yeah, twice a week, but I'm going down to one. Okay. So twice a week for maybe like 30, 40 minutes. So I'll go in, warm up a little bit. I've been doing front squats and deadlifts a lot. And, you know, some like single leg type stuff, a little bit of plyometric work, but I'm going to transition to more plyometric work here pretty soon. But yeah, so I find that maybe about an hour and a half total in the gym a week, and about anywhere from 3 to 5 hours on the bike is about what I have. So that pretty much equates to me just like smashing on the bike and then going in the weight room and then resting.
And, yeah. You know. And then without giving away too much of what people see from you on the bike in 2018, are you seeing changes, whether it's in power or sustained efforts, that you might be able to attribute to weights?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Definitely seeing some improvement there, kind of across the board.
Where specifically are you seeing it?
So my sprint power is certainly better. You know, that's like the one everybody wants to strength train so they have a better sprint, right? So yeah, certainly seeing pretty solid improvements in my sprint power, especially in the situation of fatigue. You know, when I'm tired, I can still sprint really well. So that's good. My 20-minute type power's still spot on, kind of with where it was last year. Not sure if that's, you know, there's definitely a lot of like TT type adaptation that you see from weight training. I'm not sure if there's some of that involved or if it's just because I've, you know, continued to sort of smash my face in every time I ride. You know, there's probably some of both, but, so that's still there. You know, I've set like new 5-minute PRs, like, you know, I don't know. It's like going good. So
it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, and what's interesting is like we did a, sort of a little team mini camp a couple weeks ago, and we did this big ride, and I was really nervous. I'm like, dude, we're doing a 5-hour ride. Like, this is my training week, like, right here. Not even sure how this is going to go. Like, we got beyond 2 hours. I'm like, oh man. Like, I mean, I think Keith Williams was probably laughing really hard at me. He drove the follow car for us on the team ride, and man, I was dropping back like every 15, 20 minutes to grab something to eat, something to drink. I smashed like 6 Cokes in this ride. I'm like, yeah, just give me anything. I got to make it. Because the whole thing was, we're going to ride conversational pace, and then we're going to race up the last climb of the day. I'm like, I got to have something in the tank at hour 5, dude. And so we raced up this, I don't know if you guys know Bucks Bar Road. It's like maybe a, I don't know, 8 or 9 minute climb at the end of the day. And yeah, it was hard. But
did
it went well.
Did you take it?
I mean, I guess you could say I took it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's no, I mean, did you win it?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's what matters to me.
Yeah. It was.
There.
Yeah.
We didn't have distinct directions on where the stopping point was. Let me make this clear.
Oh, so there's a dispute. Gotcha.
I'm not sure there's a dispute, but I mean, I don't know. Like, I think some of us raced the whole way, and some of us didn't. So,
so you're on a new team this year. Can you elaborate as to who you're? You know, are we the first of the year yet? I mean, can you say?
Oh,
transfer,
for sure.
Transfer market's open?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No. It's been open. Yeah, I don't make any like big announcements on social media or anything like that. I think, you know,
according to current
Merry Christmas.
Got things that you've said on social media, but go on.
Yeah, you know, I try to keep quiet on there for the most part now. Like, guys like Kurt snooping around.
He's got an extensive list of quotes here.
That's good. You know, I don't have anything to do either. So yeah, so I never really like made any big announcement or anything like that. But yeah, I'm switching teams this year. Changed from Herbalife 24 to it's now called Oak Valley Community Bank, presented by Williams Cycling. Was formerly known as Williams Cycling last year. So we have a new title sponsor on board, which is pretty exciting. But yeah, it's like a smaller local team with a really good group of guys. One of them, like you said, being my former teammate, or current and former teammate, Josh Carling. So that's, you know, that's an exciting thing to be back racing with him. You know, and a really good group of local guys that are good friends and really strong riders who want to work together to try and succeed. You know, so it's going to be fun. We've got guys that are pretty young and want to try and do something in cycling, go pro, race at a high level. And I think, you know, maybe I can try to help them in races that they're strong in, like, you know, road races, things like that, or, you know, crits, anything that they can do well in. I want to be there to help along with that. You know,
what
if that makes
what
sense.
Are your goals? Because for a while there, and I remember you even had a blog online about your weight loss, and you're going, you know, you're going to really dive into this.
Yeah.
Which you did. And actually seem to, I don't know if you're still blogging anymore, but you seem to have lost the weight. So congratulations.
Thanks.
There. The blog worked. No, but what are your goals kind of now moving to this team from Herbalife?
You know, obviously I've got a much larger constraint on time than I used to have being in grad school and working and, you know, everything like that. So my biggest thing was I just want to still be able to be competitive at the local level. I want to be able to do something in a race, right? I kind of started this off season thinking like, oh man, I'm gonna have 3-4 hours a week to train. I'm just gonna try not to get dropped like in races. Yeah. And as I, you know, started throwing in strength training, started riding hard, started, you know, continuing to progress things along, I'm like, I'm actually doing okay here. And I think things have shifted for me a little bit to where I certainly want to win some races next year, and I want to help my teammates upgrade to Cat 1. I want to help my teammates win races that they want to win, and I think that all those opportunities are going to line up throughout the year. So, I mean, goals in particular, I don't have anything specific. I better win a bike race, at least. That's one. Personally, that's just like, I have to do that, I think, at this point to... you know, I don't know, like I put in a lot of effort to train, and I think that, you know, based on my numbers, I'm still pretty okay. Like, I think I can do it. So I think that would be a big challenge for me, you know, being in grad school and stuff and sort of starting the year thinking I wasn't going to be able to even be there. So I want to do that. And then, you know, obviously, jive with the team and help everybody continue to develop and just have a lot of team successes. I think that's just really all I want from the year.
Is your training become more focused, you think, since you've had all these constraints on you, or were you like that? Because if you only have that 3, 4, or 5 hours, I mean, you've got to get in and out. You know, you're not doing the Thanksgiving Day ride as an example. Because
I did the Thanksgiving Day ride. I love that ride.
Okay. Everybody likes it except for Ty.
I don't like it.
What's wrong with the Thanksgiving Day ride?
I don't know. I hate people.
Okay. Well, that's fair. I mean, as long as you know it.
Put some headphones on and no, be in your own bubble.
Okay. So went and did that ride. Perfect. Good for you. I honestly don't know why I hate it. I just do.
Your training time is probably a lot more focused. You probably have a lot less slough time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So maybe you're wasting your time before, you know, with your 5, 6 hour weeks. Ooh, look at me.
Maybe. I think it's interesting that, you know, I've really decided to just focus on my strengths this year and try to be good at crits and that kind of thing because I have limited time. And through that, I've just been training hard for short periods of time because that's really what's available to me. And yeah, it's certainly been really structured compared to what I would typically be doing in December. You know, I always ride hard over the winter, even when I was putting in larger volume. I just can't get on board with like, don't challenge yourself.
Well, plus I remember you were hoping to make like the Redlands team. So
right.
You kind of come into the season hot and, you know, show yourself and you were climbing with all these little sticks and, yeah. You know, so, wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
It's what's been the, structured for sure.
What's the team goal? So, you know, you're not going to be traveling like with Herbalife that they were doing a little bit more the last few years.
Yeah.
But what's Oak Valley? Is that what it is?
Yeah, Oak Valley.
What's kind of their goal this year? Do you know?
Is it? Well, so we actually might still do some travel. There's an opportunity for that potentially in the summer with like Tulsa Tough and, you know, maybe Boise Twilight Crit. And you know, we've even talked about potentially going to Tour of America's Dairyland. So those are all really fun races that I enjoyed last year doing them. Well, I didn't do Boise, but Tulsa and Dairyland were the first for me last year, and they were just a great time. So I'd love to go back. But I think in total, all our team goal really is just to be good ambassadors for our sponsors on a local level. And that's about it. Like, we don't really have, you know, we don't really have any goals to like be a national level team or like be, you know, be any like level per se. We just want to be successful as a team and you know, be good ambassadors for Oak Valley Community Bank and Williams Cycling. That's about it, you know.
Do you coach yourself?
I do.
Okay. So yeah. You've switched over.
So I've made the switch. Yeah. Yeah, mostly because, like, you know, I mean, I'm just telling myself to ride hard, and I think at this point I there's more to it than that.
You know, in law they say the attorney that has themselves as a client has a I forget even how this goes. As an idiot for a client? No, the attorney that you know, represents himself has an idiot for a client. So I didn't know if it was the same with coaching, but good for you.
Yeah, I'm having fun.
Good. You have anything else?
A little underhand.
I was just going to say, Williams, weren't they the best area team or the points competition winner from the NCNCA last year?
Yeah, I believe so.
I mean, you guys did pretty good against some big teams with big budgets.
Yeah, that's one really cool thing about the team is that everybody's willing to sell out for each other. And, you know, I'm thinking about next year and really getting excited about that, you know, being involved in a group like that. And really, that's the way that you do go up against bigger teams with budgets and things like that, is you race as a team. And ultimately, when everybody puts their best effort into a plan, that's when success happens. And I think Williams is like really, really on board with that. And that's, I really am stoked about that.
Yeah, so. That's good to hear. And obviously your comment about Josh earlier when he came with you, I mean, that if he's kind of he seems to be kind of the lead man on the team. Mm-hmm. So that's
his
good
dad. He's definitely team dad.
Yeah. So sure. That kind of attitude of him formally being, hey, I'm going to be here and lead you out. I mean, that's a good example for everyone going forward. Cause you and him both, I mean, you have a lot of clout.
Yeah. And I'm actually, you know, it's funny. Cause like, when I first joined the team, he was like, yeah, you know, I'm excited. You know, I'm going to lead you out. I'm like, dude, you beat me like all year last year. I'm going to lead you out, actually. Like, so it's going to be a fun year.
Just don't lead him out on those TTs because he goes down hard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe he wouldn't if I let him out. I said, hey, point out the potholes. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. We talked about that. So
I feel so bad for him, man. He's just like, He says he broke his collarbone before actually falling down. Like the pothole impact broke his collarbone.
Jeez, that's brutal.
He's like, I felt it snap and then I fell. I'm like, oh.
We debated that, whether or not he was the person that could make that call. But we weren't sure.
Nah, Josh is a crusher, dude. Yeah. He would know. He would know.
Now, you know, I don't know. This is a weird thought that came from out of nowhere. We did the Coffee Republic ride this last week. And see what you think. You've done that multiple times, right?
I've done it once or twice.
Familiar. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Ron Chavak shows up on this thing, you know, on a cross bike.
Not just a cross bike.
It has cross wheels and tires. You know, mm-hmm. There's mud still flinging out of his knobs.
Perfect.
And it's single speed.
Yeah.
And he was crushing us up the Ridge Road. Awesome. And down to Auburn Falls.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, that's
pretty tight. Oh, wait. You coach him, right?
I do. Yeah. yeah, that's really fun. So Ron's definitely different than a lot of athletes out there because he's aiming at a series of big endurance mountain bike races across the country in 2018, the NUE series, and he's going to be doing them all single speed. So definitely like hitting a lot of single speed specific work. It's a different type of demand on your body with having to, you know, make power without choosing what gear you're in, right? I mean, you're either at, a lot of times they're doing 20 minute, 30 minute climbs at, you know, 40 RPMs, but they've got to be geared tall enough for, you know, big flat sections and things like that, where you're out motoring and you're pace lining and, you know, trying to stay with the geared bikes and that kind of thing. So trying to meet some of those demands, you know, had some fun, like throwing in, hey, take your single speed to like a group ride.
Did you look at his file? I'm just curious.
I did. It was
hilarious. What his cadence was coming down Auburn Falls.
It was like 150s. It'd be like 150 sustained for a bit and then like coast, and like at least it wasn't a fixed gear.
Yeah.
Yeah, like seeing him go up Ridge Road was hilarious because I think he cracked like 800 watts four times. Like, I know you weren't like attacking, so, but that's
he
really
did.
Well,
actually, he did a big attack.
It was probably just like him. He was going over a part on the road.
We start that first section, and it wasn't
roll the gear over.
Yeah. It wasn't high pace. Okay, it was pretty mellow
on Ridge to start with.
Yeah. And we look around. There's quite a few people, and then he attacks, but only because I think he was tired of doing like 20 RPM. Right.
Right.
And he's like,
he had to pedal.
I can't go this slow. I have to go. And so he attacks, yeah. And then it was on. It was awesome to watch. And I was telling him, I'm like, hey, a few weeks ago, my rear derailleur went out at the top and I had to, you know, hey, it happens.
Oh, that
right?
was the joke about the rear derailleur. Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. I got a new one. Okay. But you know, that had been
it has
what,
a cable though.
5 years of a DI2 rear derailleur that with no trouble. Anyway, so the derailleur goes out and I'm going down Auburn Folsom and I'm, you know, you have to do exactly what he was doing. Yeah. I'm like, we're going to see him at the end.
I was there. I pushed you.
Yes,
more
you
than
did.
Once. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I remember this.
Into traffic.
Why do you keep pushing me left?
Get out of the way.
Yeah. No. So very impressive. And that's right. I forgot you coach him. Did you sign an agreement that you can talk about this here on?
I mean, no.
Okay. That's a problem.
Yeah. There's probably like
it's
some kind of
complimentary. So
HIPAA
sure.
violation okay. here. I don't know what
I don't
it
think
is.
It's a HIPAA.
Sorry, you're an attorney, right?
I play one. Yes.
Okay. He's his own lawyer.
I'm an idiot for okay. a client.
Okay. Yeah, but that's a lot of fun to hear.
How many clients do you have?
Actually, I don't know.
Oh, we don't need to tell you that.
I think 15 right now, but I'm not 100% sure on that because, yeah, I've had people like start and take breaks and that kind of thing sometimes in the winter, but I actually haven't like done a count. Nate would know.
Enough to keep you busy, though.
Certainly busy. Yeah, certainly busy. Having fun.
Yeah, the three of you over there, is that right?
There is. Three of us. We have a good time. So Sam Bassetti, also a former teammate of mine, UC Davis graduate in exercise biology, and Nate and myself. So,
are you going to be participating in Nate's camp coming up?
I was really looking forward to it, but I'm not.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. The reason why is a good reason. My girlfriend's going to Philadelphia for her clinical rotations for occupational therapy, so we're going to be moving her the same weekend as the camp, even though we had planned everything you know, for the camp and got the dates all set. She didn't find out about this particular field work location until really recently, so we kind of had to make a call an audible.
You mentioned before, you're like, hey, she's been with me through all this craziness, but see, those kind of sacrifices, that's probably why.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. I think she's just definitely the better half.
Yeah, well, you know, you're doing what you have to. You got anything else?
No.
Any other social media
Give me one more quote. Let's talk about one more.
No, I'm not going to throw anything else at you. Oh, maybe I'll ask one more question.
Okay, let's get it.
May 25th of 2011, you said, you ever quit a job and really feel good about it? What was the job?
2011, what would I have been doing?
This is May. You said it was the best feeling in the world.
God, I don't know. I was probably working at a restaurant because I worked at a couple different restaurants during that time. I don't know.
Not important. I guess the one thing I would say is I've watched Matt since I started racing, which I think was probably your first year in 2010.
Yeah, I'll never forget when you grow up. Introduced yourself.
He's truly one of the good guys, one of the guys that's grown up into a real man, and it's been fun to watch.
Oh, thanks,
and
Kurt.
It's been really good to see you go through this.
Thanks, man. It's been really fun to watch you grow up too.
It was that Golden State crit. You and Shockey were hanging around as like inseparable. And I think I don't know, were you in the same field as each other? Were you a four then, 2012?
I'm not sure.
You were around Sac City.
I may have been a...
No, I think you were... I think you won that day, actually.
Yeah, I think I was a two in 2012.
You're right. Did you have the camera on the bike that day?
I think so. No, I got fourth that day.
But you were in the break.
I was in the breakaway, and then I went to sprint, and both of my legs cramped because I didn't know how to ride fast. It's like, I have never been in a breakaway. This is really hard. And there I was. So,
yeah. Well, you've come a long way.
Thanks.
Kurt, Chris, do you have anything else?
Nothing. As I wasn't there to watch you race in those time periods. I didn't actually start racing until 2013. You were one of the two people that sold me my first bike,
though. I remember that. Yeah. I'll never forget.
So that's pretty cool.
What was that at?
Giant
Folsom
TCR.
Bike. Folsom Bike.
Okay. Yeah. He came in and he's like, yeah, I want to get a bike. And, you know, I remember like the topic of racing at some point coming up, like, yeah, you like might race or something like that.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, I think I might try it. I'm like, all right, cool. It's really cool. And then he kept like showing up to the Wednesday night rides and like going faster each time. And then he was just crushing. I'm like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool.
We're happy about that.
I'm happy about
So we do Nate gives me like a coach's tip thing that I put in here on the podcast. Do you have any tips like you could just, that you know offhand, maybe something out there for the casual bike related?
Oh, man, you really put me on the spot here.
Well, maybe not.
I'm not good with elevator speeches, you know? Like, I got asked this question the other day in a sports psych class. Somebody said, well, what's the most important thing you learned this year? And I'm like, I can't answer that. I don't know. I think the biggest thing is challenge yourself. If you ever find yourself riding and, you know, you're continually doing the same thing, you're continuing to... you know, if you train the same way the last 3 years and you haven't been any better, challenge yourself, do something different, you know, make it hurt, make it count, and don't let it be easy for a while and just see how it works out for you.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go home and do that right now. Actually, I got a birthday party to go to and an ugly sweater party tomorrow. So those will be painful.
Enjoy the cake and beer and
sweater. Just challenge yourself by not eating a lot of cake.
I'm not a big cake eater.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you joining us today. I really do appreciate it. It's a good conversation and one I would like to have maybe again in the middle of the year. We'll find out how you're doing and we'll obviously see you out there. So if someone wants to get a hold of you, they want to contact you for being their coach, what's the best way to do that?
Go to datadrivenathlete.com. You can see my email address there, matt@datadrivenathlete.com. Send me an email. Even if you just have questions, anything like that, always feel free to reach out. You can add me on Facebook, send me a message, whatever. Yeah.
Sounds good. So if you guys like our podcast, check us out, Between Two Wheels podcast on Facebook, any of the other places, share it, like it. And thanks again, Matt, for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Kurt, thank you.
Thank you,
Chris, thank you for joining us as well.